Collateral damage of broken trust. Collateral damage of broken trust. Over the past years, I had leveraged everything I could against the equity in my home. What started as sensible financial maneuvering, funds raised for house renovations, wedding plans, buy-to-let schemes, and ambitious cafe build-outs, soon morphed into something far more slippery. It wasn't just about keeping the wheels turning. There was something intoxicating about liquidity. The illusion of control. The confidence that came with seeing large numbers in your account, the freedom of acting like capital, was always just within reach. That desire didn't just stay confined to bricks and mortar. It found its outlet in trading, not Forex, more foolishly, in the alluring simplicity of binary options. Binary trading, I learned too late, is a brutal form of financial roulette. You bet on whether the price of an asset, be it a stock, currency, will go up or down in a matter of seconds. If you're right, you win a fixed return. If you're wrong, you lose the stake entirely. All or nothing. Heads or tails. And I convinced myself it wasn't gambling. It felt logical, strategic, calculated. At least that's what I told myself. In truth, it wasn't impulsive, not entirely. There was a past whispering in my ear, something that had always hovered around the edges of my ambition. Back when Sally worked in the city, she was a senior Eurobond settlements clerk, deep in the belly of high finance. Every day she was surrounded by lightning-fast dealers, moving staggering sums through global markets, all flush with six-figure salaries and bonuses that rivaled lottery wins. It was a world of power and pressure, and though I wasn't part of it, I often brushed against its corridors. I'd drive in to collect her after work, only to be made to wait, usually because the system had crashed. Their entire trading network ran on software created by Ken Wood, his company MIS, a former Eurobond dealer turned tech genius. When things went down, Ken would be called in to work his magic, rebooting the system and restoring the rhythm of the market. It always took time. So we waited, grabbed takeaways from a nearby deli, sat among the hum of city nightlife, and while the servers cooled and the traders sighed, Ken would entertain us with riddles, lateral thinking puzzles that teased logic from chaos. One night, the riddle he posed left an impression that never quite faded. You're a thief, caught and locked in a room. Two doors, two robot sentries. One tells the truth, one lies. You don't know which is which. Behind one door, £1,000,000 in your freedom. Behind the other, a confession and a prison cell. You get to ask one question to one sentry. What do you ask to walk free? The room fell quiet. Traders who'd spent all day taking £1,000,000 positions were suddenly thrown. Suggestions came and went, none quite landed. The most repeated answer was, just ask one which door leads to freedom. But Ken just grinned. That only works if you know who's lying. I sat for a moment, then something clicked. I turned to Ken and said, I'd ask either sentry. If I were to ask the other sentry which door leads to freedom, what would he say? Then I'd choose the opposite door. Ken's eyes lit up. Exactly, he said. Brilliant. Because whether you ask the liar or the truth teller, both would end up pointing you to the wrong door. And so, choosing the opposite leads you to safety. It was simple logic wrapped in disguise. Elegant. Precise. He looked at me and laughed. You're wasted in the rag trade. At the time, I was still working in my parents' clothing factory. But that night, something shifted. I knew I wouldn't be in that world forever. I didn't yet know where I was going, but I was sure it was bigger. Years later, knee-deep in my businesses with pistachios, the itch returned. I read an article about binary options. The word binary struck a chord, heads or tails, yes or no, win or lose. It felt manageable, containable, predictable. I didn't really understand Forex. I barely grasped the true mechanics of currency trading, but I understood patterns. I understood probability. I saw that the market moved up or down every second. Volatile, yes, but logical too, in its own way. I started to build a system based on the Martingale strategy, something I remembered from school. Double your stake after every loss. Eventually you'd win and recover your losses. Flip a coin long enough and you'll call it right. It made perfect sense. On paper, I opened accounts with a handful of online brokers. The one I liked most was IQ Option, based out of Limassol, Cyprus. Clean interface, responsive trades. It all felt very legitimate. What I didn't know at the time was that it was completely unregulated. A polished scam in a tailored suit. I began modestly. £1 trades. Quick, 60-second bets. When I lost, I'd up the next stake to £3, then £8, then £20. I kept going until I got it right, and when I did, I felt invincible. The winnings came quickly. I withdrew small amounts here and there. It felt real. But the losses came faster. I started chasing them, pouring more funds in from my personal accounts to recover ground. Again, and again, and again. Before I knew it, I'd lost over £40,000. At first, Diane was intrigued, even excited by the early wins. But when I finally told her the full extent of the losses, her reaction was explosive. Disgusted, furious, bewildered. "How could you be so stupid?" she shouted, and she was right. I'd always insisted I wasn't a gambler. I'd never stepped foot in a bookie. Never sat at a roulette table. But now, there was no denying it. The addiction wasn't cards or chips. It was the idea of winning, of outsmarting the system, of turning logic into profit. But logic, it turned out, doesn't always beat the house. The losses didn't just sting, they lingered. They echoed through every part of my life. The air in our home shifted. Conversations became clipped. Silence started creeping into the corners. Diane's trust, something I'd always held on to like a compass, now felt fragile, as if one wrong step might shatter it completely. I tried to play it down at first, told myself it was just a temporary setback, that I'd figure something out, that there were other irons in the fire, pistachios, the cafe expansions, property plays. But deep down, I knew. Something fundamental had cracked. What hurt more than the money was the quiet shame of it. I had known better. I wasn't some reckless chancer. I'd built things with my hands, from blueprints to bricks, strategy to service. I'd convinced councils, secured planning, brought ideas to life. But now I'd gambled away trust, stability, and nearly my sense of identity. I threw myself deeper into the work. Projects became lifelines. There was always another lease to review, another pitch to make, another deal to close. I needed to believe I could earn it back, not just financially, but spiritually, that I could undo the mistake. But the more I tried to outpace it, the more it followed me, like a shadow tied to the sun. To the outside world, I kept up appearances, smiled when needed, spoke confidently about upcoming ventures. But inside, I was splintering. The pressure to win back what I'd lost, to prove it hadn't all been for nothing, started to mutate into obsession. I didn't just want a comeback. I needed redemption. I revisited old contacts, looked into new ventures, anything that promised quick turnaround, high returns. A ghost of the same hunger that had led me to trading now began steering the wheel again. But this time, the high was tinged with fear. Every risk felt heavier. Every pound spent felt like borrowed time. There were moments of clarity, brief glimpses where I'd stare at my bank statements or the ledger from a stalled project and wonder, what if this is it? What if this is where it all stops? But then I'd push the thought aside. I couldn't stop. Not yet. Not like this. What haunted me most wasn't just the financial recklessness. It was the question that clawed at the back of my mind at night when sleep slipped through my fingers. Was I becoming the very thing I'd always promised not to be? A man led by the chase, not the craft. A builder of dreams who forgot to lay his own foundation. I remembered what Ken had said all those years ago after the riddle. You're wasted in the rag trade. I'd taken it as a compliment, a prophecy. But now, I wondered if it had been a warning. That brilliance without control is just chaos in disguise. Something had to change. I couldn't rebuild the past. But I could choose the shape of what came next. Even with the smoke of binary trading losses still curling into every corner of my life, I couldn't stop. Pistachios was still standing, just about, the espresso machine still hissing each morning, the doors unlocked, but it no longer felt like a business. It felt like ballast, something I dragged behind me, heavy and waterlogged. What had once been a dream, a chain of community cafes tucked in the heart of family parks, lavender lattes and muddy boots, mums with yoga mats and dads chasing toddlers, had lost its light. The brand was still warm on the outside, but I felt cold in it. Detached, like I was impersonating the man who first opened it. Maybe it wasn't the cafe that had changed. Maybe it was me. After the binary trading losses, the shift wasn't just financial, it was tectonic. The £40,000 I lost didn't just drain our savings, it drained something deeper between Diane and me. Trust, that unspoken glue that holds a marriage together, even through storms. Once that trust began to erode, everything else began to fall too. She had stood by me through so much. Cafe bills, late mortgage payments, rough winters and flash floods of pressure, but the trading felt different. It was a private gamble. One I took alone, even if the money wasn't. She hadn't known how deep I'd gone until it was too late. I thought I could fix it, win it back, make it right. But that wasn't what she needed. She needed truth. I'd given her risk instead. From then on, our partnership, once fluid, once rooted in shared purpose, became fractured. We still worked together. Still showed up. Still replied to emails and kept the wheels turning. But the glue had gone. We were no longer co-pilots. We were two people orbiting the same storm, trying not to collide. I wasn't playing squash anymore. The court was where I used to sweat out tension, keep myself sharp. It used to keep my mind focused and my body in check. But I'd stopped caring about that, too. I was eating constantly, binging, sometimes without even realizing. A pastry with the morning delivery, then another. Leftover staff meals scooped up behind the counter. Late-night takeaways eaten alone with the blinds drawn, the television flickering in the background. It wasn't about food, it was about escape, filling a silence that had crept into my life, into my marriage, into myself. The cafes became a theater where I acted normal. They still opened up every day. Greeted customers, played the role. But the spark had gone. The cafes no longer felt like a stepping stone to something greater. It felt like the last safe place before the next disaster. And the disasters kept circling. The debt from trading was now joined by the weight of legal fees. Sharn's case was heading to the High Court in Holborn, and the barrister didn't care about my emotional state or the debts I already carried. They wanted £20,000, full payment, up front, no negotiation. Then, like fate offering a lifeline, Nelson Gaydé walked in. A sharp suit, a clear vision, and more importantly, a check. He believed in the concept, in Red Lion, in me, in Pistachios. He didn't blink. Paid the full £20,000, up front, without a haggle. It should have been a clean exit, a breath of relief. But I didn't use it to recover. I used it to pay for the fight. I wasn't trading anymore, not on markets anyway. Now I was gambling in courtrooms, betting on justice, on timing, on hope. It wasn't about currency pairs anymore, it was about survival, reputation, redemption. But what no one tells you is that once you've broken someone's trust, once you've cracked that sacred glass, it doesn't matter how many checks you cash or what battles you win. The crack stays. And I was beginning to realize that the real loss wasn't the £40,000. It wasn't even Pistachios. It was her. And maybe, myself.